value system, right? So that, and we spent like 3 weeks and kind of teasing out different different approaches. Why on earth does the Torah even recognize some validity to different systems of law? And we saw some models for how exactly that could work, but in and of itself, it's a surprise. And then we went last week to the prohibition against, you know, our kos, against, you know, Jews and fellow Jews adjudicating cases in non-Jewish courts. We saw prohibition is treated by Rashi and the Rambam with extreme severity, right? That's understandable. The model of Chil Hashem, the model of cursing judges. Either way you slice it, right? The Isser there heavily emphasized the fact that we take Beis Din extremely seriously. We take Choshen Mishnah extremely seriously. It's the reason why when Daf Yomi gets to Bava Kamma, you know, we spend like 2 years working all the way through, you know, Bava Kamma, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, Sanhedrin, right? Like this is extremely important. And yet we saw, you know, that this was not always, there were carve outs there as well in cases where one Jew was not going to be able to get his money. So he's able to go to the secular courts. And we had a couple of theories for that as well from the Chasam Sofer and from the Klei Chemda, why that would be the case. So finally, you know, we get to talk about Baruch Hashem. Nowadays, we have a Jewish state. We're not only talking about Torah and government in a context of how halacha deals with a foreign system, totally alien values, alien people, foreign domination. How do we reckon with what else is going on? Right? Now we can ask, what's it going to look like in a Jewish state? Now, of course, you know, the Jewish state doesn't look exactly like we would ideally hope that it would. You know, that's true across the board, obviously, right? It's Reishis Tzmichas Kula Seinu. We're not all the way there. But still, how are things going to be different? How is the world of our kos? How is the world of Dina de Malchusa going to change when we're dealing with the fact that it's a Jewish country instead of a non-Jewish country, right? That's like the basic question. You know, on the one hand, you'd say, well, what do we care? Bottom line is Torah, Choshen Mishpat is Choshen Mishpat. So, you know, just like you couldn't go to the Roman court and you couldn't go to the American court, so you can't go to the Israeli court. There's Shulchan Aruch and that's, and you know, the Shalom goodbye. There's nothing else to talk about, right? On the other hand, though, you know, is there something to be said for the fact that, you know, maybe there's a difference between the Chilul Hashem of going to, you know, a totally non-Jewish court and an Israeli court, which is, as Jewish judges, might have some, you know, halachic source material. There's no, you know, absolutely no religious element whatsoever, right? There's certainly no Christianity. So, you know, how are things potentially going to change, if at all they're going to change, when we're dealing with a Jewish state, right? The answer might be, nothing, right? There's no difference between the world of America and the world of Israel and the world of, you know, Rome. But this is, you know, it's an extremely exciting question to get to ask. And as we'll see, hopefully, the answer is not so simple one way or the other. And in fact, it's been the source of some extremely vibrant debate, which I don't think we'll get to all this week, because we're going to have to really delve into a sugya to flesh it all out. But starting this week and then definitely next week, we'll get into some of the lightning bolts being thrown around. You know, we get the Chazon Ish is going to be involved in Rav Herzog, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, so I'll load up the old share screen, and here we go. So to start, we have to start with a Mishnah and a Gemara, and it's going to take a few minutes. We have to do it inside because it's a Gemara which, like, you might not believe if it hadn't been, you know, there. Like the Gemara says sometimes, you know, Ilmali Hakasav Amri, if Hashem hadn't said it, we couldn't have said it. So there's one of those Gemaras where, you know, you have the Gemara and, like, you have to double take because you're surprised that it's true. So it's the Mishnah in the beginning of the third parak of Sanhedrin. The Mishnah says, Diyim Amenas B'Shlosha. So you can have, you know, three judges adjudicate monetary law, Okay, that we know. Continues the Mishnah. Ze borer lo echad, v'ze borer lo echad. So each party to the dispute is going to choose one judge. So that gets you two. U'shnehem borin lahen od echad. And then the two of them, the two parties will agree on a third judge. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Okay, so Rabbi Meir says that's how you get your three judges. Each party chooses a judge, and then they agree on the third guy. Fine. Chachamim omrim, shnei dayanin borin lahen od echad. Chachamim say, no, it's not that the two parties agree on the judge. After all, that could take a very long time. The two judges agree on a third judge. Fine. Continues the Mishnah. Ze posel dayano shel ze. So one party can disqualify the judge the other guy picks. It's a little surprising. Why can I disqualify your judge, right? You know, if someone had chosen the Chazon Ish as a judge, could I post it and can I say, oh, he's disqualified? Like, it's ridiculous. So we have to understand what's going on here. Is that post Dan Shazat Divrei Rabbi Meir? Okay, so Rabbi Meir says you have the right to disqualify the other person's judges. Right away, we're wondering what's going on. Mishnah says afterwards, Chachamim Omrim, Ema Sai. Well, when are you allowed to disqualify the judge that the other side brings to the table? Bizman Shemi, the Alan Raya, Shane Krovin, Opsulin. Only if you can prove that the judge that the person chooses, right, you know, he the judge that he nominates for his case, turns out it's his, you know, it's his long-lost brother, right? So that's a little suspicious. That's not going to fly, said the Chachamim. Or it turns out he's puzzled, right? You know, he was caught stealing last week, right? So that renders him ineligible to judge. Aval em hayukshirin, o mumchen mipi bezdin. But if the judges are acceptable, or they are certified experts from the bezdin, sounds a little bit weird, a little bit redundant. So eino yachal aposlan, then you can't disqualify them because they're perfectly upright judges. So the view of the Chachamim seems to make a lot of sense, right? If the judges are kasher, mumcha, expert judges, you can't disqualify them. That makes a lot of sense. For a mayor who says you can disqualify judges willy-nilly because you don't like the person is very surprising. In fact, it's so surprising that you turn to the Gemara, which is, you know, I did some cut and pasting over here. So the next paragraph, and the Gemara says that this does not make any sense. Right, so the Gemara... It's over here. Gemara says, Zep posel dayano, right? According to Meir, remember, you can disqualify the other person's judge. Asks the Gemara, Kol kamine de pasil dayane, to such an extent that you can disqualify the other person's judge? How is that even possible? Asks the Gemara. Where it doesn't bring a source, you know, there's no like brisa or pasuk. It's just common sense. This doesn't make it's irrational that you could just disqualify someone's judge. What on earth is going on? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and here's going to be the key two words. The question is, what on earth do they mean? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, be'arkaos she'besuria shanu. This whole Mishnah was taught not about classic batei din. It was taught about the courthouses in Syria, right? In Syria. You know, it's like you have Eretz Yisrael over here and you have Babylonia over here. So Syria was flyover country, right? There was no vibrant Jewish community in Syria, right? So there's no successful, no major batei din. So we're talking about these strange arkos, these different courthouses. What exactly are they? What is going on there? Gemara doesn't explain. We'll have to turn to the Rishonim to figure out. But this is going to be a massive question, because when we think about the topic of Israeli law, right, and which is, you know, we're dealing with a non-halachic legal system. So is it possible that this strange institution of the Arkaos Shebisuria, the courthouses of Syria, could that possibly be a precedent for you know what you have nowadays in the state of Israel, right? For Jews and judges who are using different law, would that be possible? That's what we're gonna have to figure out. Okay, So Rabbi Yochanan says, look, if you're dealing with the Syrian Arkaos, that's the case where the Rabbi Meir allowed you to disqualify the other person's judge, right? But continues the Gemara, Alva Mumchim Lo, but if we're dealing with expert, you know, really with real expert classic judges, oh, no way, right? Absolutely, absolutely not, right? You go to the CRC and you can't, you know, say you don't want Rabbi Reese adjudicating your case because, you know, you just don't want him to be doing that, right? That's not your call. You have a mumcha, you have an expert, he gets to handle the case. So that's very nice. The problem is, it doesn't fit the other half of the Mishnah. Gemara asks, Ha-midiktani seifa, at the end of the Mishnah, it said, Ha-chachamim omrim, when Ha-chachamim disagreed with Rabbi Meir, and they said, Emasai win, is it the case that you are allowed to disqualify judges? Not like Rabbi Meir said all the time, rather, in a limited set of cases, Emasai bizman shemevi raya, shem krovin upsulin, only if you can, you know, bring a proof that the judge is the brother of the other party. Mishnah had said, right, that the view of the Chachamim was that if they're, you know, expert judges, you can't disqualify them. So the clear inference, says the Gemara, Michlal Rabbi Meir, Mumchin Nami Ka'amar. Meir also then must have held that you can disqualify experts. So the Gemara launched into a problem, right? Meir was disqualifying these judges, and the Gemara said, that doesn't make any sense. And then where I said, no, we're talking about this strange, bizarre institution of the Arkos of Syria, right? But a classic expert judge, you're not allowed to disqualify. Then the Gemara comes back and says, well, sorry, that doesn't, you know, I understand why you want to limit Rabbi Meir to these Arkos of Syria, but it doesn't work. Because when the Chachamim are yelling at him that the Mumch and the experts cannot be disqualified, clearly Rabbi Meir thinks that they can. So the theory, very nice theory to explain the Mishnah, but it doesn't fit. So the Gemara says, well, you know, you're right, we have to readjust and explain more carefully what the Mishnah was actually saying. So the Gemara says, Hachi Katani, here's what the Mishnah really was actually teaching. Aval imayu ksherin, right? When the Chachamim said, if they are kasher, and if you recall, there was that like strange redundant phrase in the Mishnah, right? Because the Mishnah said, if they're kasher or if they're mumchen. And that doesn't make any sense, right? What, are they kasher or experts? Those seem to be the same thing. So that was a difficult and redundant phrase. So now the Gemara is going to pick up on it. And the Gemara says, what the Mishnah really means is the following. If they were acceptable judges, meaning they're not your brother and they're not, you know, incarcerated for theft, so in such a case, na'asu ki mumchin mi pi bezdin, they are made as if they are expert judges who had been, you know, declared as such by the bezdin. Ve'eino yochol le'poslan, and you're not allowed to disqualify them. So that's the Gemara's conclusion, how to explain the Mishnah. If you're dealing with a regular bezdin, then there's nothing you can do, right? They get to judge the case. If you're dealing with these Syrian arkos, these Syrian courts, which we need to figure out what exactly they are, so then Rabbi Meir says, look, these are not classic batei din, so if you want to disqualify the judge because you don't like the guy, go ahead. And Chachamim said, absolutely not. If they're, as long as they're, you know, kasher, and they're not related, and they're not, you don't have a criminal record, so then they can judge your case. What we need to figure out is who are they? What qualifications do they have exactly? What are they using to judge? Right? What the Arkos of Syria are is still not clear at all. Finally, the Gemara has one more line to prove this, and it's going to be important going forward. So we should just stick with the Gemara for one more minute. So Tashma, says the Gemara, let's prove that this is how to read the Mishnah. That the debate between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, when you can disqualify judges, is these Syrian courts. So Gemara says, Amru lo Rabbi Meir. Here's a braisa. The Chachamim were fighting with Rabbi Meir, and they said to him, Lo kol himenu sheposel dayan shemumcha le'rabim. Right? So are you really going to reject a judge who is an expert for the masses? So that sounds like we're talking about, you know, a world-famous judge. But that doesn't make any sense, right? Because Rabbi Meir cannot have been disqualifying a world famous judge. So Gemara concludes, Imolo, what does it mean? Kol shehimenu shaposel dayan shehemchuhu rabim aleihem. Means that they were upset with Rabbi Meir for trying to disqualify a judge who the people had appointed upon themselves. Not that he was an expert, world famous dayan. If that's the case, nobody can disqualify him once he's involved in their case, right? What the Gemara means is that you have a judge who was selected by the masses. So this is important because this is the first piece of evidence that the Gemara gives for us as to what might be happening with these arkaos of Syria, which we don't know what they are. We just know what they're not. They're not classic batei din, but we don't know anything else. Who are they? What system are they using? Why are they doing so? So the Gemara gives us one piece of information here, right? Which is that himchuhu rabbin, right? That they were appointed by the masses, and that may be giving them some status. Okay, so that's took a little while to set up, but that we have to get, you know, it's piece number one. Any questions so far? We're good so far. Okay, awesome. So who are the arkaos, right? So immediately, right, first thing you would do is you would turn to Rashi, right? If we had the Gemara in front of us, so we wouldn't have even read so much Gemara. We would have looked at Rashi right away. But this way you can build the suspense. So what does Rashi say? Arkaos shebisur, yeah? He says, Shelo hayibikian bedin Torah. The Syrian courts were not experts in Torah law. Elgacha filo love matzima akiv. They're not experts in Torah. And therefore, right, according to Rabbi Meir, anybody could disqualify one of them from adjudicating his case. Okay, so we understand where Rashi is coming from, right? Rashi says they're not experts in Torah law. That makes sense, right? Because we're not dealing with a classic Bezdin. So it makes sense that they don't know so much. But then that just raises a whole new set of questions. If they don't know Torah, what on earth are they doing, right? How are they judging the case, and why are the chachamim allowing them to continue, right? If you want to disqualify one of these judges from the arkaos of Syria, because you say, you know, he's a total amaretz, so that seems to make a lot of sense. Like, you shouldn't allow him to adjudicate your case. Why is that all of a sudden acceptable, right? Rashi fits with the Gemara very well, but it's like logically almost impossible to understand. So we'll see. There's major resistance to Rashi, but Rashi is going to win the day at the end. But let's see who's fighting over here. So if you ever learn Sanhedrin, so the Sanhedrin is a lot of fun because you have this little thin book, Chidushi Haran, right? Which is normally, you know, Chidush HaRan is normally Rabbeinu Nissim from Gerona. We're not really sure who wrote the Chidush HaRan on Sanhedrin. It might have been the Ran, it might not have been. Whoever it was, it's awesome. It feels like you're often reading like early 20th century Lithuanian Achronim, except it's Arishom from, you know, Spain. So the Ran, or whoever the Ran is on Sanhedrin, let's just call him that. So he quotes very, very regularly Rishon Rabbeinu David Bonfil. Who's Rabbeinu David Bonfil? We're not even sure who he is. We're not even sure what his name is. But Rabbeinu David is a student of the Ramban. We have his Chidushim to Masachas Pesachim. So the Daf Yomi is getting there pretty soon. So, you know, he'll probably be getting quoted. Rabbeinu David, student of the Ramban. Once again, it feels like you're reading like Brisk, except it's from the Rishonim. You'll actually find Rabbeinu David called three different names. You'll find him called Rabbeinu David Banfil, Banfid, or Banfir, because the Lamed, the Dalet, and the Resh, right? I guess they were changed by different Rishonim. But he is a student of the Ramban, and he's quoted all the time in the Chidush HaRan and Sanhedrin. And Rabbeinu David has no patience for this Rashi consistently. And he's going to come up against evidence a couple of times in Sanhedrin But his ironclad view, and we can totally understand it, is very, very simple. Dine Torah have to be judged by judges who know Torah. Right? It's pretty basic. In fact, it's kind of surprising that that's the minority view. But he hammers on home several times. You cannot have a Din Torah that is being judged by people who don't know any Torah. Now, he's going to have to explain what these arkos are. So we'll see how he explains it. It's brilliant, but it's also challenging. So the theory originates with the Gemara a little bit earlier, here in source number 3, where the Gemara, right, beginning of Sanhedrin, is trying to figure out how many judges you need in all different cases. The Mishnah at the beginning of the Masachat Sanhedrin goes on for an amud and a half. The number of judges you need for every single situation, 3, 5, 7, 9, 23, 71. So how do you need 3 for monetary law? So Gemara says the truth is you actually only need 1 judge. Right? Midaraisa, 1 judge would suffice. How do you know? Because the Torah says, Betzedek tishpot amisacha. Right? So I'm not an expert in Ivrit, but I know that tishpot is in the singular, right? Thou shalt judge thy fellow with righteousness, right? I don't know how you say thou in the plural. I don't know. I think it's only singular. But anyway, right? So you, in the singular, shall judge your fellow. So that's clearly one person, right? Torah doesn't say, you know, betzedek tishpatu, because of course you have to have 3 judges on a bezdin. So if Torah says one person can judge, why do we always have 3 people on a bezdin? So Samor Rav Acha explains, Elamishum, Yoshvei Kranos, right? Because we have to have 3, you know, we're afraid of the people who are sitting around on the street with, I guess, nothing better to do than to, you know, nowadays, those are the guys who are doing jury duty, right? So in the time of the Gemara, they're the guys who are, you know, sitting up as the judges. So you know, if you have 3 judges, hopefully one of them won't be one of the Yoshvei Kranos, one of them will actually know his stuff. So the Gemara asks kind of a funny question. The Gemara says, I don't know, you know, Atu Bitzlasa Milo Havi Yoshe Kranos. You get 3 people off the streets, it's very possible all 3 of them are, you know, people who are sitting around unemployed with minimal yeshiva education, right? Like, what exactly is the theory over here? Oh, if we require 3 judges, then surely, you know, then we're going to have someone who knows his stuff. Is that really true? So the Gemara says, yeah, right. Yeah, it's the lottery theory. You know, I guess people maybe knew halacha better in the time of the Gemara than they do now. And if, you know, if you pull 3 people off the street, assume it's a Gemara, then one of them will know his stuff. So the Ran quotes Rabbeinu David jumping in over here, and he says, you need to have one person who's, you know, knowledgeable. It doesn't mean he's a world expert, but, you know, Yada hadin hecha note. He has some clue as to what the halacha would be. You know, he can open up a Shulchan Aruch and he's not opening upside down, right? But
says the Rana, quoting Rabbeinu David, but for sure, you know, vaday, if you have nobody who knows anything, you leka b'huchad digamir, ein dineim klum, achar sheinam yodim adin.
Then their judgment is meaningless, right? So that's his position from the very beginning of the
Gemara,
right? If you want to have a kosher court case, you have to have someone who knows stuff.
Okay, so what is the story with these arkos in Syria? So let's skip there. We're going to scroll back up to this paragraph in a minute. But what does Rabbeinu David do with the Syrian arkos?
Rashi, we understand where he's coming from, and Rashi said that it's, you know, you're out in the boondocks in Syria and they don't have people who know Torah law there, so you got to make the best of what you got. But Rabbeinu David says that's unacceptable, because what on earth does it mean to have a Torah court case not judged by Torah law?
So the Ran quotes him. He says, Rabbeinu David, Zal Piresh, he explains. Zahani Arkos, Yoshvei Kranos Ninhu. Oh, these Syrian courts are the same people being pulled off the street from the beginning of the Masechta.
They're the Yoshvei Kranos, the people pulled off the streets. Bechol Tlasa Minayu, and if you take three of them, Minastam, presumably, Yavshar, Delo Gamir Chad Minayu, right? Those are, that's the same situation over there, where if we get three people, presumably one of them will have a working knowledge of halacha, and then he'll be able to help the other two. So, right, what's going on here? The Gemara has this you know concept of the arkos of Syria, the courts of Syria. We don't know what they are. Rashi said they don't know anything. Beit David says that can't be. Oh no, they have basic familiarity, right? They have, you know, a K-12 education. You know, they went to day school throughout. They can open up a Shulchan Aruch, an Aruch HaShulchan, and basically, you know, muddle their way through, you know, use Google and Halachapedia and whatever, and you know, get like at least 60% of the way there. And that's what the Syrian, that's what the Arkos of Syria were. But there's no question that the system we're using has to be halacha, right? That's like that's beyond the question. And so the only question is, how mediocre can our judges be, right? And if you're in the middle of nowhere, we'll live with mediocre judges. But they have to know something, and you know it has to be a Torah based system, right? You know, like
so. You know, some place you go, you might trust the kashrus, you might not trust the kashrus, but. At minimum, you assume that they're not, you know, pouring gallons of chazer shmaltz into what they're making, right? So, like, same thing over here. Now, even with this being said, Rabbi Nadavid still feels uncomfortable allowing such reality. So, he has to explain why, right? Why were the Tanaim debating whether you could disqualify these guys, right? You know, the average day school graduate being pulled off the street. So he says, oh, according to Rabbi Meir, you can disqualify him because he says, you know, look, I don't think this guy actually knows anything. You know, you pull three people off the street, lottery theory, one of them will have remembered what he was taught in 11th grade halakha. I think this guy is one of the other two, right, says Rabbi Meir. I don't think he's one of the ones who knows Torah. So he has the right to make that claim and therefore reject the judge. What is the response of the Rabbanan? Why did the Chacham say, you're not allowed to disqualify this judge from the Syrian Arkos who was chosen? So the Rabbi Nadavid says there are two reasons. This is going to be important. Number one, because this guy, remember, he's been selected, right, by the town. He's not just literally someone who was chosen off the street. You know, if you're in the middle of nowhere, Syria, so the one guy who went to a yeshiva, he's the guy who they appointed as their local town judge. So since he was chosen, so therefore you can't disqualify him. That's reason number one. And reason number two is that presumably, this is kind of interesting, Bochu Rugil Ksas Bedinin.
He has some experience, right? He may not have, you know, studied in a Yadin Kolel, but since he's the local judge in, you know, Yahapisville, Syria, so he's had some cases come his way, and that experience is enough for us to invest in with trust. So that's the kind of opposite approach in the whole sugya, right? Deny the whole thing exists. We came in and we're wondering, what is the status of Israeli law, Israeli courts? Is it possible that we have a precedent in the Gemara for Jewish judges using some other system? Oh, maybe that's these Syrian Arkaos. Rabbi Nadavid slams his hand on the table. He says, absolutely not. Only one way to go. Torah law, halacha, judges. If you're in, you know, Eretz Yisrael or Bavel, where you can get certified, you know, Yadin, Dayanim, Baruch Hashem. If you're in Syria and you can't get those, so we make do with, you know, the regular basic training, and hopefully he's learned something on the job, and he's been appointed by the community. So that's the best we can do. But we got to use we have to use Torah. Period. That's Rabbi Nadavid. Okay. Now, that's the foil. As we already saw, Rashi
disagreed. Rashi said, no, we're dealing with like Amoraim and Gemurim. We're dealing with people who don't know anything. So, right, if that's the case, then what on earth are they doing? So the Ran, before he quotes Rabbeinu David, so he quotes the other view and he explains it, right? Says the Ran, who are these people who don't know Torah law? What are they going to do? He says, Shin Yodin Din Torah, Ela Shemunibos Makomo Shein B'nei Torah, Kefi Omer Daitam. What do they use? We say, Seichel HaYashar, right? They're just going to use their own instincts, right? Like there was, I saw in Shul, they had like the Choshen Mishpat page, like the little handout in Shul, what it was called, right? And like the case was, what was the case they gave? Reuven borrows Shimon's bicycle for 15 minutes, and then he comes back from the bike ride, and Levi is standing there very angry, and Levi yells at and Reuven had agreed to pay for the, right? He was renting the bike. Reuven agreed to rent Shimon's bike for half an hour, let's say. So he comes back after half an hour, and Shimon is gone. Levi is there, and Levi's furious. Levi says, "Why are you riding my bike?" Reuven says, "What do you mean your bike? I rented this bike from Shimon." Levi says, "Yeah, Shimon was my shomer. You know, he was supposed to watch my bike, and instead he rented it out to you." So Reuven says, "Okay, I'm sorry for the miscommunication, but you know, here's your bike. Just take it." And then Levi says, "Well, hold on a second. You know, if you agreed to rent it from Shimon, so you just used my bike for half an hour. Pay me whatever you were going to pay Shimon." So that was the case they had there, right? So, you know, do you say that, well, since he was going to pay Shimon anyway, he should pay Levi, or do you say no? So, right, reading the case, I would think, like, you know, instinctive omed datam, you know, like basic common sense, would say, yeah, tell him to pay, right? You agreed to rent the bike. Who cares whether it's Shimon or Levi, right? You'd agree to pay $20 for it. You use it for half an hour. So pay the other guy. What difference does it make? Now, halacha says that's actually not true. Right. They explained halacha is he doesn't have to pay Levi, but that would be like a classic situation, right? We have, you know, three guys who are fighting over a bicycle. So use common sense and figure out something that seems fair. That is what the Arkaos of Syria were for Rashi, right? And for this other view in the Ran. In other words, they're not using Torah law. And once that's the case, once we're recognizing the ability to just use their own instincts, Well, now that opens a can of worms, right? What else can they use? Now, it's all surprising, like, this is a thing, right? Like, I think we're probably sympathetic to Rabbeinu David, who says, that's not a thing, you have to use Torah. What earth is this? You know, I forget what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, I'll just do what I think is right. Like, you know, the Neely classes, we started with the end of Shoftim, where the Navi is blasting Bnei Yisrael for doing Isha Yashar Be'inav, right? Everyone does what they think is right. Like, that's normally not good, right? So, like, Rabbeinu David is probably going to be furious with Rashi. Why, what do you mean, Omed Daitam? Do what the halacha says.
But the answer probably is, like, as we've seen and developed, that there's this whole undercurrent, right, in the world of Dina de Malchus Adina,
where we said, yeah, right, there's obviously halacha, but, you know, Rashi and Gittin, who said, Bnei Noach have a mitzvah's dinin, right? They have a commandment to set up courts, and that creates, right, like a basic authority for basic law. We had that in the Klei Chemda last week, right? Who was talking about why you're allowed when you get permission from the Beis Din, and they tell you we can't, you know, enforce the case, so go to the non-Jewish court. So the Klei Chemda said, yeah, because in such a case, the prohibition of lifnehem below lifnei gayim doesn't apply. Because it just doesn't apply when Beis Din can't make it, you know, can't exact its verdict. But wait a second, why does that allow you to go to non-Jewish court? Clearly, thought the Klei Chemda, there was some basic law there as well, right? We recognize that system to some degree, not to the extent that will allow you to abandon the Beis Din to go there. But writes the Klei Chemda, the Beis Din can't handle it. You can go there. So this seems to be part of that whole, you know, world that we've uncovered. That there is a recognition of basic law. There's Torah on top of that, but that there is, you know, an underlying, more primitive, more foundational, more instinctive system that also can be used when need be.
So then we want to figure out for Israel is, well, is this, does this meet the qualification of when need be, right? And is there a difference between what the Ron was just talking about a minute ago, omed daitam, right? Their instinct and their common sense versus having, you know, some formal on the books system.
So just a couple more we've shown him to look at. Fav will definitely go quickly, but it's important. The Meiri says basically the same thing as Rashi and the Ron. He says these are kohos of Syria. Rabbi Levin is not correct. We're not talking about people who are using Torah law, right? They were not experts bedin Torah. He just pastes, you know, cuts and pastes Rashi right in here. Then he fills in. What do they use? Elisha Danin laomer hadas. They use, you know, their estimations and common sense. Uvchukim uvnimusim. And these two words are going to be like the center of a huge fight going forward. What does this mean? They're using laws and customs. So what does it sound like? Laws and customs. Sounds like some on the books code, right? It's more than just their common sense. So where are they getting these laws and customs from? Is it possible that they are using the local Gentile code, right? You're in Syria. So, you know, there are no yeshivas in Syria. There are still no yeshivas in Syria. But okay, so how do they adjudicate a case? So they go next door, they, you know, they look up what's in the Syrian courthouses, and they adopt some of those laws. Could that be what the Meiri is talking about, right? And then you would say, yeah, look, you can't go to a non-Jewish Beis Din using non-Jewish law, but if the Jewish courthouse uses it, maybe that's okay. I mean, I wouldn't have thought so, but that kind of sounds like it's what the Meiri is saying. So we're going to have to swallow this, right? What is he talking about? You know, the Ron just said they're using common sense. The Meiri added these two words. They're using laws and customs, and we've got to figure out what those are. But potentially, that could be a huge precedent, right? Because in theory, one could say, what is Israeli law nowadays? Israeli law, Israeli courts are the Syrian archaos using, you know, a mishmash of British law, Ottoman law, God knows what else, but they put it on the books, and that's chukim benimusim, right? That could be exactly what the Meiri is describing. In which case, you know, if someone wanted to go to an Israeli court instead of a Beis Din, so they might say, look, you know, this is halachically the Syrian archaos. No, they're not in Syria anymore. Now they're in Israel. But that's why these two words are going to be so essential. Okay. So the last Rishon to see to lay the foundation, right, for the war, the coming battle, is this tshuva from the Rashba, right? So the Rashba, who I think has more tshuvas than any other Rishonim, and I don't think it's close. So right, so Rashba is living in Christian Spain. And there are some cities in Spain which have incredible Jewish communities. Like in Barcelona, you have, you know, the Rashba and the Ra'ah at the same time. And then the Rush comes flying in because he's running away from Germany because they just held the Maharam Rittenberg hostage until he died. And so he runs out of Germany before they do the same to him. So you have cities like Barcelona, which have, you know, the greatest of the greats. And then you have other cities which, as we'll see, out in Spain, are not so fortunate. So the Rashba gets this question from this person, Rabbi Yaakov ben Kadshef. Okay, we got to bring that name back into vogue. So what does Rabbi Yaakov ben Kadshef ask him? He says, "Hey, I have a very simple question. We have a judge crisis in our town." says, "What should we do? You guys just leave us. What do we do with the cities she'ein sham mi she'odei afilu os achas?" There's no one who even knows a letter, right? You don't know Aleph Beis, apparently, in some of these towns in Spain. It's like pretty shocking, but that's what he tells them. Okay, so what would they do? He says, God, these people who don't know Aleph Beis,
one of them has to be the judge in the town, ufasher al karchan shebal davar, and he has to impose maybe arbitration on the parties. Because what's the alternative if we don't, you know, appoint one of these amaratzim to run the Jewish Beis Din? Well, I'm lo namid nimtzu holchin larakal shel nachrim rabba anasin. Right? If we don't have Jewish judges, they're going to go to the non-Jewish courts. And as ugly as it will be having Jewish judges on Aleph Beis, it will be worse, you know, having the Christians in charge of Jewish court cases, right? Because then it's just going to be, you know, whoever can come with a bigger bribe. I mean, it's going to be a total disaster. So that's the question that they ask the Rashba, right? In towns where apparently no one knows Aleph Beis, right? Take his word for it. That was a thing. What should we do? So the Rashba writes back, right? And he says, first of all, you have to know, you know, Shurat Hadin, letter of the law, you know, you have to appoint judges who know Choshen Mishpat, right? You can't have judges who are not mumchen, not just, you know, K through 12. We need serious Dayanim, right? Yadin, the whole thing. It's like ridiculous. Like, come on, you need competent judges. But he says, you know, it's not always an option, right? He said, so if that's the case, if you don't have that, so okay. So then hakol lefi hasha, right? You have to deal with everything goes according to the hour. V'chol ma'asecha yu l'shem shamayim, you know, do the best that you can. You know, you're acting for the sake of heaven. You're trying to make the most of it. So get the people, they get the city to appoint someone. Vim kiblu manshe yir, if the city appoints someone, then that's mutter, right? And you can't disqualify the judge. We're talking about another, it is no Aleph Beis. But as long as the person does no Aleph Beis, was accepted by the city, it works. And says the Rashba, dahainu arko shebesuria. You think you in Spain are dealing with a brand new phenomenon of Jews who don't know Aleph Beis but need judges. It's not new. That is exactly what the Gemara was describing in the Archaos of Syria. Okay, Rashi said that they were not experts. Rashi's being nice. Rashi's nice, right? When Rashi said they were not experts, they were not Beki and Bedin Torah, what he meant was they don't know anything, right? And because they're not using Torah law, says the Rashba, like the Meiri, like Rashi. They're not using Torah law. They're just using their own Seicha, right? So therefore, it concludes the Rashba. Well, you have to look, at least you have to make sure they may not know anything, but, you know, Mikol Makom, it says at the end, Sarach Livdok, Acharei Anashim, Kshirim, Yirei Elokim, Sone Betza, right, you know, Yisro's people. You know, they're God-fearing, they despise bribes, they're intelligent. Hey, you know, there was no yeshiva where they grew up, so they don't know Choshen Mishpat, but they're good, basic, ethical people. What we would call, you know, like, if we had a Ben Noach court, right, that is exactly what the Rashba is describing as the Archaos of Syria. So we have then three Rishonim who have established that at least when necessary, the Halacha recognizes this alternative court system, the Archaos of Syria, who are not even using Torah law. In fact, they don't know Torah law. They don't know Aleph Beis. They're smart, maybe. They're ethical, but they don't know anything. And that is being accepted. This Rashba gets quoted by the Ramah, right, in Shulchan Aruch. So it's officially on the books. And then the question, and next week we'll you know see whether this is going to work, is whether this precedent of the Archaos of Syria, right, the judges who are not using Torah law, maybe according to the Meiri, are using Chukim and Nimusim, are using local law and local custom, right, is that going to be enough of a precedent to allow the you know, the secular Israeli system? In fact, just one last source to finish it off, because we're bringing things in from Syria to Eretz Yisrael. So the Talmud Yerushalmi actually dealt with talks about the Archaos of Syria, and Reish Lakish has a line. Reish Lakish says that like the Bavli, that Mishnah where you're disqualifying judges is talking about the Archaos of Syria, but says Reish Lakish, ha bedine Torah lo. Right? So Reish Lakish says you can disqualify judges
when we're dealing with Arkos of Syria, but not when we're dealing with Dine Torah. So what's clear from the Yerushalmi is that Reish Lakish understands that the Syrian courts are not using Torah law, right? Because if it's Torah law, then you can't disqualify them. If it's Syrian Arkos, you can disqualify them. So that lines up with Rashi and the Meiri and the Rashba. They were dealing with courts that are not using Torah. And despite the Rabbeinu David, who's screaming at you, of course you have to use halacha to adjudicate your court case, right? Apparently that's not always the case. So then, right, we'll look at, you know, next week when we get to Israel, is when is that true? Why is that true? What are the prerogatives that can be used? What are the systems that can be used? And can that justify going to an Israeli court instead of a Bezdin? So that we'll look at next week.